Welcome back to the FKT podcast. I'm your host, Heather Anderson. Today, I'm joined by Lucy Gossage, who is our fifth place 2025 FKT of the Year winner for her 11-day, 9-hour self-supported Southwest Coast Path FKT.
Lucy, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I'm really excited to chat with you.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
Probably like most of our listeners, I had basically zero familiarity with the Southwest Coast Path prior to you setting your FKT. I was wondering if you could just start by telling our listeners what that's like. Just describe the route, the length. Just give us a picture of what it's like.
Yeah, so it's around the southwest of England, and they say it's 630 miles, and I had 40,000 meters of elevation. So it's pretty hilly, but nothing big. So it's just up, down, up, down, up, down. And logistically, it's quite challenging because there were something like 15 or 16 different ferry crossings. So rather than running up estuaries, which take you 20 mile inland, there are these ferries, which are, they're tiny little boats, most of them, that take you literally 500 meters across the estuary to the other side. So logistically, when you're plotting it out, trying to time arriving when the ferries are running, because some of them are only running for like 2 hours in the morning and 2 hours in the afternoons. I know there was one day and I think I had five different crossings that I had to get. So that's kind of another jigsaw piece to add to the planning, plotting it out. But yeah, it's really, really beautiful. And yeah, that's kind of it in a nutshell.
That sounds super challenging from both aspects, both the elevation gain and loss, and also the added level of having these ferries you have to meet. I was wondering if you could tell us, because this is the first FKT you have registered on our site. So maybe you've done other FKTs, but this is the first one on our site. So I was wondering how you chose this route to do an FKT on and why you wanted to do an FKT here.
I do things a little bit on a whim. So a long time ago, I was a professional triathlete, and then that ended and I somehow fell into ultra running, but more as an adventure, not competitively. But I kind of got into it by doing the Spine Race, which for people who don't know, is a crazy race in the winter in the UK. So it's up the Pennine Way, which is 268 miles nonstop in winter and self-supported. So I did that kind of as a challenge. And then the next year I went back and I ended up winning it. So that was this time last year. And then after that, I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. And I just kind of sat with that. And I'd heard about a friend had done the Southwest Coast Path. So she previously had the FKT. So that was a couple of years ago. And I listened to her podcast. I think that planted a seed. And then as kind of time went on from the Spine Race, I realized it was gripping me. I'd read a book. And there's a book called The Salt Path, which describes a couple who walked the Southwest Coast Path over several months. It turns out actually that book was fabricated and all of it was based on lies, but it's been quite a scandal in the UK.
Oh, wow.
It was an amazing read. And as soon as I started reading that, this is probably February last year, I was like, this is what I want to do. And I felt like it ticked all the boxes, being something really different to anything I'd done before, something that wasn't a race, but had a kind of time target, something that was a proper adventure. Because whilst I've done quite well at ultra running, I don't want to be doing it as a, you know, triathlon was my serious career and this is all just about adventuring. So that's kind of how it started. And yeah, as soon as I started reading that book, I was like, this is what I want to do, and decided to do it in September because that was when the school holidays would have ended, but still have kind of hopefully enough daylight to be doing most of it in the light and fairly nice weather. So yeah, and it just kind of ticked the boxes of being longer than anything I'd done before. Logistically challenging, the self-supported bit really excited me because it wasn't just about running, it was about everything else that went with it. And yeah, that's kind of how it started.
Yeah. I was actually wondering why you selected self-supported rather than, you know, going supported or on this route.
Two reasons. I think, I mean, purely and simply, I think asking someone to support you for 12 days is a big ask. But mainly, I think, so a guy did it in the summer, supported, and it was amazing following him. I just loved it. He's an incredible guy. But it's just about the running. Like, you don't have to do anything other than run. And that's not what I wanted. That makes it not running. I wanted the adventure. And looking back now, I'm so, because you're holding yourself together on your own. You've got to do all the problem solving on your own. You've got to make those ferries on your own. You've got to get your food on your own. You've got to get your sleep, get that, you know, all that kind of structure and discipline and everything is down to you. And that, for me, made it a complete kind of, yeah, a complete adventure, not just how athletic you are. So, yeah, and I'd really encourage people to try and do stuff like that self-supported because it is, yeah, it's really rewarding. And yeah, and you can phone people if you want the supports. But yeah, I just really love that problem-solving aspect. And I think when I look back now, I don't think I realised at the time kind of quite how big it was, as in, like, where now, you know, I can't really conceive how I did it. But I think one of the things that struck me was the kind of concentration for so long, because although you're not running as fast as you can, you're always thinking about the next step and thinking about, are you doing everything you can to keep yourself in as good shape for the next step? And that it's not, yeah, it's quite intense, which is crazy because you've got so much time where you're just shuffling along on your own. But at the same time, it's really quite intense just juggling all those things in your brain and everything else goes out your head because all you're thinking about is getting from A to B. And I love that.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think there's definitely something special about that added complexity of knowing that you're taking care of yourself that really turns it into just like, I'm going to run as fast as possible from point A to point B to I'm going to, you know, have this adventure while I do it and deal with everything that comes up along the way.
Yeah, if you don't get asleep, because the way I planned it, I wanted to be able to sleep properly each night, which meant that I had to move pretty well. And I think had I not been able to move as quickly, I wasn't moving amazingly quickly, but I was moving quite well. And I think that was key to me being able to do it because it meant I could sleep pretty well each night. But yeah, all of that, you're doing all on your own and just getting your food and yeah, all of that kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, taking care of yourself and self-motivating, you know, those are huge challenges mentally when you're trying to put all your attention on moving forward, but you still have to reserve some mental energy for taking care of yourself and also for getting yourself out of the low points.
Yeah. And there's, you know, as soon as you wake up, your alarm goes off and you're like, right, I've got to get everything sorted to get out of here as quickly as possible. And then you get to the hotel. And what I'd done is I'd posted myself parcels each day. So I had all my nutrition for the next day and breakfast because I knew I wouldn't be able to get breakfast in the hotel super early and bits and bobs of like spare kit and tape and things. So I had my parcel waiting for me at the hotel each day and they all turned up, which was amazing. And yeah, so you get to the hotel and you're like, right, sort everything out. Where do I get food? Eat food as quickly as possible. And then literally go to bed, sleep. The more sleep I get, the easier tomorrow is going to be. So that there's no downtime, which is quite hard. I don't think you realise it in the time, but there's literally no downtime. I think there was an hour whilst I was stuck waiting for a ferry and I could just kind of lie in the sun and scroll my phone. I was like, this is so nice. Mm. I've got downtime. But every other time you stop, you're like, right, I need to, you know, I had to go to cafes to get food. But I was like, right, I've got 15 minutes. I need to be out of here in 15 minutes because then that will mean that I don't need to run as fast to get to the next place. And yeah, it's quite a lot of discipline. But I really enjoyed that side of things.
Right. I want to circle back to something you mentioned earlier. You said you had a friend who previously held the FKT on this. Did you consult with them? Did they play a role in you setting this FKT? Or did you ask them questions with planning?
Not really. So it's actually Sarah Perry, who's the Backyard Ultra World Champion.
Oh, okay.
And I know Sarah really well, but we've done a few weekends and a few days in Italy together. So I told her that I was doing it. And yeah, she was like, oh, you'll have the best time, you know, go for it. But I actually felt, I don't know, I felt like, yeah, I didn't really want to bother her. And yeah, so I didn't talk to her about details and things. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'd be more than happy to talk to someone if they wanted to ask me. But I didn't really feel comfortable probing too much.
Right. I'd like to talk a little bit more about the logistics. You've mentioned a bunch of things that were on my list that I wanted to hear more about. So let's start with the sleep. Obviously, you said you were getting, your goal was to get good sleep, but you mentioned hotels. So can you talk about maybe how much sleep you were getting and why were you staying in hotels? Is this an area where you can't sleep outdoors or just describe that whole strategy?
You can sleep outdoors. You're not meant to wild camp in the UK, but I'm sure you could bivvy. But the thought of that for me would not, you know, this is my holiday as well. So my whole strategy when planning it was I'm going to try and move quite quickly and sleep. And I actually moved a bit quicker than I thought. So I ended up getting a bit more sleep than I thought. But yeah, I was probably out for about 14 hours every day, which meant that I had maybe 14 to 15 hours, which meant that I had 9 to 10 hours to rest and do everything else. So I think I was in bed lying down for at least 6 hours every night. There was definitely one night where I was asleep for 8 hours. It sounds crazy for an FKT. But that just meant that I was then moving pretty well the whole way. I mean, I was limited a bit by this ulcer. But when I listened to Sarah and the bit that, you know, when I was talking to her about it, she was basically walking certainly the second half of it and was getting in at like, I think it got to the stage where she missed her, she had to go through the night. So arrived at a hotel the day after she was meant to get there. She was getting so little rest, she was then moving so slowly, which then kind of catapulted into even less rest, which made it, you know. So I just thought, do you know what? I think for me, it's such a long way. I know it's not like the Appalachian Trail, but it's still 12 days. It's such a long way. I want to get enough sleep so that I can move quite well and still vaguely, you know, still enjoy it.
Right.
And yeah, for me, that worked really well.
Did you make all your reservations at these hotels in advance? Did you have any problems getting to your hotels? To me, that just seems like it would be a difficult thing to gauge from home, like how fast or slow you'd be moving, and I'd be worried about missing the hotel or stressing out about getting there. I don't know. Did that end up working out just fine for you?
It was the puzzle to do it. Yeah, so I booked it all in advance. So I planned it with the schedule, and there was a little bit of kind of, okay, well, like you say, how do you know how far you're going to be able to do each day for that long? Because it's so elevated, you know, so much up and down that you don't quite know which bits are slow. But it's not as simple as just, right, I'm going to do, I think I averaged, it was 55 miles a day I averaged. But it's not as simple as like go 55 miles and stop, because you then have to find a hotel that's on the coast path, because obviously you don't want to be deviating off like, you know, 2 miles inland. But then you have to think about the blooming ferries and the tide of crossing. I'm quite surprised. I really enjoyed that side of things. And I'm not really a scheduler. I'm not really a planner. I do things by the, you know, I mentioned I'm off to Colombia. I haven't planned any of it yet. But I did really enjoy that. But it was the ferries and the tidal crossings that were so difficult, because they were mainly in the first 5-6 days. But there was one, I think there were 2 days where I had 4 or 5 crossings that I had to get in a 2-hour window. So there was literally no room for error. And I just banked it. Okay, I'm going to be moving 4 miles an hour, including rest. And that's what I'm going to do it on. And yeah, because when I was planning it, I thought, well, I don't just want to just beat Sarah's time. If I'm doing it, I either go and do it as a holiday and just go and have a nice time, because I had 2 weeks, or I try and be bold and knock a fair chunk off her time. So I thought, well, I'm going to try and do it as an FKT. So I'm going to try and be bold. And I wanted, that's kind of what made me want to do it, find something on the edge of possibility. So I was like, right, I'm going to try and do it 2 days quicker than Sarah. She'd had some mistakes and missed ferries and things. I was like, I think 1 day is definitely doable, but 2 days is going to be a big jump. But that was kind of how I plotted it out. And it did all work out, thankfully. There were a couple of ferries that were cancelled that made me delayed, and then that had knock on. But I did, made every hotel and all my parcels turned up, and I made all the ferries. There was one which I had to get a taxi round because it didn't start. And that was kind of first thing in the morning. So the ferry didn't start till 10:30 or something. So I got a taxi at 4:30. But other than that, every ferry, I didn't have to use taxis or anything. So yeah, I'm really pleased with the logistics side of it.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like a lot of logistics for this route. And how do the ferries by and large work? Are they just on a schedule and you just show up and get on, or were you having to make reservations in advance?
No, they're not ferries like you would imagine ferries. Most of them are on little boats with a man. Like, imagine a fishing man's boat from 100 years ago with a motor. So a little boat with a man and maybe one other person on if you're lucky. And it's literally five minutes. I think there was one that was 20 minutes. It's a bit longer, but they are literally just an old guy who's probably lived in the village for, you know, forever, who ferries people across the river to save 30 miles going inland. So, yeah. And if it's bad weather, they're not running. So I was lucky, actually, because one day there was really bad weather. If the tide's too high, they're not running. That caught me out one day. And then there are a couple of crossings where you have to wade across the tide. So You can't do it at high tide. So you have to make sure that you time it kind of within 2 hours of low tide. So yeah, they were really fun. But I actually found the days where the ferries were almost easier because there was a bit of adrenaline. It's like, I kind of thought of them as ferry intervals. So right, I've got 12 miles and I've got a ferry. Then I've got another 12 miles. I've got another ferry and I've got another 6 miles. And I've got a tide crossing. And that was quite easy to motivate yourself. Whereas the days that were just running, there was less kind of time pressure. So it took a bit more mental motivation to keep moving.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Like, there's no deadline to reach the top of the hill. There's a deadline to reach the ferry. So, you know, you just plod along versus like, okay, I have to get to this ferry.
In my head, I was like, right, if I can move 4 miles an hour, like cover 4 miles every hour, then the way I plotted it out, that will mean that I'll get enough rest. So that was what I was aiming to do, like be moving 4 miles an hour kind of through it. And generally that worked pretty well. At the end, I did a kind of big push at the end and just had, I think, 3 hours sleep in the middle on the last night. I'd got this ulcer on my toe that was, oh, it was so sore. And that was causing a bit of an anterior tibial injury. So I did slow a little bit right at the end, but overall I managed to move, kind of keep that 4 miles an hour, which was kind of my motivation.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit more about the toe, and did you have other injuries?
It's for probably anyone who's ever done anything like this. So I've got the phrase niggles come and niggles go, and they do, don't they? Like, I went into it with a few niggles. I was like, oh god, my knee, my Achilles, and these could flare up. And, you know, first 4 hours, you're thinking about them, and then nothing from them. And then something else starts hurting, and then something else. But no, really, I didn't have anything other than this toe, which was a blister that it then turned into an ulcer. I mean, it was bad. I was lucky it didn't get infected. It could have ruined the whole thing. But I think because that was so sore, then that caused the anterior tibial injury, which was actually okay until the last 24 hours. And by that point, I kind of knew I'd get to the end, but it probably, yeah, another couple of days would have been, it's like anything, isn't it? As soon as you stop, you know, you can barely walk.
Yeah.
But mum and dad were there at the finish and I was like running down, looking normal, you know, running down the last bit into them. And then in the car, I stopped at a petrol services. I was like, I can't get out. They were like, you were running 2 hours ago.
All that adrenaline wears off and then your body is like, oh, we hurt.
Yeah, and your body's like, no, you're done. Yep. You're not doing anything for a while.
In the car for 2 hours, you're done. So at what point did the toe blister start? Was that pretty early on, or did this kind of happen towards the latter part of the trip?
I mean, I got a blister. I just didn't look after it properly. And then it gradually got worse. I think it was day eight. Okay. I remember where it was. Day eight, it was really bad. And I actually thought it might end the kind of trip just because it was so bad. But luckily it didn't. I managed to, like, I was just spraying alcohol gel all over it every morning, wrapping it in gauze.
Right.
And and it healed up fine at the end.
Well, that's good.
I'm annoyed because I shouldn't have got that. That was me I should have managed my feet a bit better.
Yeah. I know we've mentioned your parcels a few times. Can you talk a little bit about what that looks like? Because here in the US, we definitely do boxes for longer trips. And so I'm sort of familiar with this. Were you mailing these to the hotels you were staying at and, you know, just collecting them when you checked in? Or did you have to get them from somewhere else?
No, I sent them to the hotel. At each hotel and said, for Lucy Gossage, staying the night of whichever night I was staying. Mm-hmm. I didn't even phone the hotels.
Oh.
They all turned up.
Oh, wow.
There was one that, and I got there, and this is the last hotel, so it didn't really matter anyway, but it got my dinner in there. And this dodgy guy was like, no, we haven't got it. I was like, well, you have. I've got the tracking here. It says it's delivered. So yeah, just using our like Royal Mail, our national postage service, mm-hmm. it was quite incredible. And then even better, I'd sent myself halfway a full change of kit, including new shoes and new like everything top to toe. So I'd sent stuff back and I just ordered a delivery. So you can pay 30p, so you pre-book your postage. And I'd included in the parcel like a bag addressed to myself, had pre-booked the postage and arranged a collection for 30p, which is like a third of a dollar or something, and just left it at the reception and it got picked up by the postman.
Wow.
Who then came again. So it was amazing.
That's amazing. I love that.
It was a bit, you can imagine the logistics of doing right. all of that beforehand. You're like, what am I doing?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it seems like the way you did this had just so many moving pieces that all needed to work out, and they did, which is incredible to me.
Like, I do think the self-supported FKT thing is really cool because there is, like you say, there are so many things that could go wrong, but they're all down to you to sort out. Yeah, it doesn't negate the supported ones. You're probably running far further. But yeah, even just running without a pack and having, you know, people there to massage you and sort your feet. I don't know. I just really enjoyed the being self-sufficient bit. I think I'm really proud of that.
Yeah, definitely. One more question on the logistics side of things is navigation. How is this marked? How did you navigate? Is it easy to follow? Is this an established path?
It's pretty easy. So it's pretty much signposted the whole way. It's fairly fluid. So there are quite a lot of diversions to, you know, if the cliff edge is eroded. And I think they're often... Well, there are often low tide and high tide, which I didn't realize. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you get down onto this beach and you're like, oh my God, I can't get over this. I've got to go all the way back up again.
Yeah.
Yeah, the navigation is really pretty. I mean, you'll keep the sea on your left and you can't go wrong.
Hard to get turned around with that landmark.
Yeah. I mean, I think there are a few variations, but yeah, generally it's pretty well signposted. And I think for the FKT, you have to be, you know, you have to also, because it's very tempting to just cut the, because it's so jagged, the coastline, and you could cut off like a big chunk if you just cut out the zigzags the whole way, you know, little zigzags, but over 630 miles, it'd add up to quite a lot. So it's really tempting not to go all the way to the edge, but obviously you have to.
Right.
Yeah, it's kind of another bit of mental motivation, mental kind of discipline. Right. You can't, you know, if you run normally, you're like, well, I'll just cut across this, whatever. But you can't do that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. What was your weather like? Because I know it can definitely be pretty rainy there. You mentioned that it was pretty stormy one day. Overall, what were your weather conditions like?
I would say a mix. I feel I was a little bit unlucky given the time of year. I think the couple of weeks after, it was way nicer. I had some sunny days, I had some really wet days, and then I had one day where the winds were crazy. I've never been out in wind like it. It was quite incredible. And it was one of the shortest days. I think it was only 49 miles, but it had 6,500 meters of elevation. Mm. So bear in mind that you're not climbing a mountain, you're just going up and down. So it's crazy that you can get that much vert without going higher than, 250 meters. But the winds were so strong. Luckily, they were blowing inland, not out to sea. Whenever I tried to run, I was just being blown across. I couldn't even hold my phone to video. And the winds were so strong. Like the sea was being blown up into uphill waterfalls, like spousing up out of the sea over to the cliff. But it was incredible because it was so wild. There was no one else out there. And whilst it was super tough and you couldn't hear anything, it was just exhaust. You know, when you're in that wind and it's just like, just want a minute of peace and quiet. And at the same time, it was so beautiful. And it was a day I'll remember forever just because it was on the wildest part of the coast. It was just me and this crazy wind. It was, yeah, it was magical, despite being super tough.
Yeah, sometimes those two go very much hand in hand.
Yeah. And you kind of know this will be a day that you'll remember.
Yeah, exactly. You mentioned you were all alone during this section. Overall, how many people were on the trail? Is it a fairly busy trail? Or did you have long periods of time where you didn't see people?
Mixed. So it was out of kind of tourist season. Yeah, there weren't many people on the trail, I would say, but kind of coming into and from villages and things, you often get a few more people. And there's there are lots of towns. I mean, there are some seaside resorts that you run through that are proper holiday resorts. So I'm running through. Whenever I got somewhere like that, I'd generally phone a friend because I knew I had reception. It was just flat running. So I'd be running along with my poles, chatting away, looking like blood or whatever, food or looking like a right idiot, and they're all on their holiday. But yeah, it's a very accessible trail. Like, one of the nice things, lots of people go and do it in chunks. So kind of do a week at a time and maybe take 3 months or something to do the whole thing, but in chunks. And so you do run past people who are, like, I met a couple and they'd been doing it over, I think, 30 years. And they'd got 100 miles left. So they just go and do a little chunk every now and then. And I thought that's really nice. But it's funny when you get to your hotel and they're like, where have you come from? And you say, and they're like, oh, was that where you started? I was like, no, that was this morning. They just look at you and they have no concept, do they?
Right, yeah. It's very confusing. I've definitely had that experience many times.
Funniest, I think, was the last night. So I was staying in this, it was called the Grand Old Hotel or something, but they have a lot of them in UK coastal resorts that used to be really grand and are now just dilapidated, really run-down hotels. But I got there at, I think, about 10:30 at night, absolutely drenched because it had been raining. And there's 1920s music blaring out with lots of older people, like, who were there on some retirement weekend or something. And the guy at reception just looked at me like, who are you? And I was like, is this music going to quieten down? He was like, it will close at 11. But anyway, then a couple of hours, 3 hours later, because I left quite early, I went back down again. It was the same guy in reception, but he didn't sleep. So I just was like, I rang the bell, no one answered. So I was like, I'll let myself out. And he then comes out. So I let myself out through the fire exit. Mm-hmm. He then comes out and was like, can I help you? I was like, no, what it? And he's like, you shouldn't have used the fire exit. I'm like, you should have woken up then.
Right.
I'm thinking, who is this guy? And he quite rightly is thinking, who is this lunatic who got here at 10:30 at night, who's leaving at 3 o'clock in the morning?
Right. Yeah.
Here's the weirdo here. I think it was me.
Well, you definitely weren't like the other guests anyway.
No, he was just like, what is she doing?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And two, you've been out running or whatever all day and you show up and you're always sweaty and dirty and bedraggled. And I always feel like I walk in and they're just like, where have you been?
Yes. I think that I got more bedraggled the more I went on because more people kept asking me like, are you okay? I remember going to a cafe and I was like, right, what's the quickest food I can get? Granola with some yogurt. And she came up to me and she was like, do you want honey? You look like you need honey with that. Or you're just sitting outside a shop. Because it gets to the stage, doesn't it, where you can't move any extra distance.
Right.
So you go to the shop to get food. You just sit like right outside with all this food and drink and trying to do your bottles and eat stuff. And the people go past like, are you okay? I'm like, not really, but no, I'm fine.
Not really, but it's intentional.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that you provided, I'm sure, a lot of dinner time conversation for people while you were out there. You'll never guess what I saw today. So I'd love to just wrap up with talking a little bit about how you prepared for this. Obviously, you spent a lot of time on logistics. But aside from that, like with your like physical preparation and mental preparation, how did you get ready to be out there?
Oh, that was the best bit. So I did the spine race and then recovered, obviously, and wasn't sure what I was doing. And kind of decided to see the Southwest Coast Path, but I was out on holiday in Italy with some friends and we were doing some running and just running and adventuring and biking bits. And I realized I was getting really tired and I was digging a hole because I work full time as a doctor. So it's like juggling it all is quite hard. But anyway, I was like, right, I'm going to enter this fast 100 mile race, mainly because it will make me rest before it. Mm-hmm. And also then I knew I wanted to do some kind of race. And I've done this race and then I can just spend the whole summer adventuring. So I did the 100 mile race, which was the start of June, and it was a really runnable one. And then I just had a summer of, it was amazing, of just adventures. Just like me and friends, we go off and do, we ran from the coast in Wales, went around the Isle of Wight, went, I don't know, Lake District, just weekends away, just big days in the hills, which is what I love, with no like semblance of kind of structure, but just big. I did a bikepacking trip with some friends as well. Just kind of being out there in the hills and yeah, just I guess that really. And I do, I mean, I strength train twice a week. So I'm pretty religious with that. I hate it, but I make myself do it. But yeah, I just love the big days in the hills. And then the rest of it was just commuting. So I run or cycle to and from work. And that's the way I do most of my training in the week.
Mm-hmm. I think the adventure as training often gets overlooked, and it's the best way because you don't have a hard time motivating to get your training in because you're doing something that's fun along the way.
Oh, I just love it. And, you know, I did triathlon like seriously for a long time. I did it full time for a few years and then part time, but racing professionally alongside work. And that was my time as an athlete. And this time now, this period of my life is, for me, it's really important that it's about adventure and experiences and seeing places and not getting sucked into just trying to win races and be quicker. And that's a great thing about ultra running. There's so many different ways to challenge yourself, aren't there? Mm-hmm. Like you could do, I mean, last year I did the spine race, I did the FKT, I did a really runnable 100 mile race, I did a 50 mile race, I did loads of adventures with friends. It's so diverse, all of mm-hmm. that, they're all completely different. And they're different skills and they're different physical challenges and they're different mental challenges. And I just love that you can always think of a new way to challenge yourself. It's not just about how quick you can be.
Yeah, absolutely. Life's too short to not be having fun.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I work in oncology and yeah, you remember, you know, I really see that every day. And actually, I think a lot of people say this with kind of big trips that it takes a bit of time to kind of get into them and let your head just relax. And I really found at the start I was overthinking it. I was too stressed about what was coming and I was kind of not telling myself it was impossible, but just I wasn't kind of in it. I was thinking about like how hard there was left, how much there was left and how hard it was going to be. And then I remember thinking about a conversation I'd had with a young person at work who was dying, a really young person. And she just, the words she said was like, I'd just give anything to just be able to get up in the morning and go to work like my friends are. And I remember I had so much time thinking about it. I was just like, why am I stressing about this? I'm on this adventure of a lifetime. What am I doing? And it was such a kind of sense check of how lucky I am. And I think I often get kind of sit up moments like that, like light bulb moments when you think about conversation with people you've had at work and yeah, how lucky we are to be able to go and do stuff like that. And yeah, not overthinking it sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. I would imagine in your line of work, you have that pause that comes from conversations a lot more often than most, but I definitely think that getting out and doing adventures like this can just help you overall have that good frame of reference of, you know, this is how I'm spending my life. I'm doing this because it's fun. I'm doing this because I enjoy it.
Yeah. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because adventures with, yeah, what is it about people like us that makes us want to do crazy hard things? Because, yeah, arguably it would have been much more fun had I done 40 miles a day and spent the whole 2 weeks of my holiday doing it mm-hmm. rather than doing 50, you know, that's eminently more manageable, isn't it? But there's something, yeah, I think having that balance of doing hard stuff and then doing fun stuff where you're not pushing yourself is, yeah. For me, I get a lot out of the hard stuff and I'm sure most people listening to this podcast probably the same kind of people.
Yeah, definitely. I think doing the hard stuff makes you appreciate everything else just that much more.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's quite cool to look back and think, wow, did I really do that? How does, how? You know, that's quite amazing, isn't it? When you can't quite comprehend how you got your body to do something. And that's genuinely what I think. I can't imagine going doing that again now, but, you know, I'll probably find something at some point and I'll do something crazy again.
Yep, exactly. I feel like the people like us, it's always like, oh, I'm never doing that again. And then not too long after, well, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations on being our fifth place FKT of the year for 2025. And thank you so much for coming on the show today. It was a pleasure to chat with you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks again, Lucy, for having me on the show. You can read about her FKT on the website, fastestknowntime.com, and follow her adventures on Instagram at Lucy Gossage.